This is Sustainable East End, a show about land use, energy and water resources, transportation, and the farming and food industries on the eastern end of Long Island. I'm Francesca Riemann, co-producer with Tony Ernst. First District Assemblyman Fred Thiel has represented the East End in the New York legislature for many years. He was re-elected last fall, running on the Independents, Democratic, Working Families, and Women's Equality Party lines. He's been an advocate for the environment throughout his tenure in Albany. I talked with Assemblyman Thiel this week about several environmental issues he's been involved with in the legislature and the East End community, including community preservation funding, transportation alternatives to cars, offshore wind power, and climate legislation that was just introduced into the New York State Legislature, the Community and Climate Protection Act. Assemblyman Fred Thiel, thank you so much for coming on to Sustainable East End.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to join you and look forward to talking about issues on the environment and sustainability here in our hometown.
That's great. So let's start with open space. Water quality is one of the top issues, if not the top issue, for many of our residents out here. And the Community Preservation Fund is being used for a lot of different things. Do we need to increase the take of it to address some water quality issues?
Well, actually, the voters agreed to do that. I mean, the Community Preservation Fund started in, was passed by the state legislature in 1998. It was approved by the voters in the five East End towns. East Hampton, Southampton, Shelter Island, Riverhead, and Southold was approved overwhelmingly in 1998 and has been in effect for 20 years now. And the original program, the money could be used for land preservation, open space preservation, farmland, historic preservation, and parks and recreation. So for those four purposes. And over 10,000 acres have been acquired across the five towns for those purposes. But about 2 years ago, there was the recognition that you needed not just to take care of the land and protect the land, we also needed to protect the water and reverse the trend of degradation of our water quality. So we passed legislation in Albany about 2 years ago that would allow the towns to utilize 20% of the fund each year for water quality projects. And there was a referendum, and that passed by an even bigger margin, by up to 80% of the voters voted for water quality. So the program that we have now is we still have the land preservation component, but 20% of the fund can also be used to water quality. The other thing we did was we extended the period of the tax. It was supposed to expire in 2030, and now it goes out to 2050. So there's an extra 20 years worth of revenue. So we're actually had more money for open space and money for water quality. So water quality is already an eligible category. I think the question going forward is going to be as more and more of the land is spoken for and there's less vacant land for us to buy as we complete our open space plan, are we going to need to increase that 20% for water quality? And while I don't think we're there yet, I think sometime in the not too distant future, you know, we may need to increase the percentage for water quality because, to me, the most compelling local environmental issue that we're dealing with is water quality. We're dependent on it for the environment, for the economy, tourism, farming, whatever you do, you need clean water. And, you know, we've identified literally millions, if not billions of dollars worth of projects, whether it's cleaning up from, you know, PFAS and PFOA, you know, those emerging chemicals, upgrading septic systems, extending water mains, providing people with public water. There's a great demand. You know, the Community Preservation Fund provides local funding for that. You know, we've got a $2.5 billion state bond act to provide state funding, which places like Wainscott, for example, have been able to take advantage of. So water quality of critical importance. You know, the CPF is there to help with water quality issues now, including the extension of water mains. There's no doubt that we're going to have to do more and more with water quality. This is a down payment, and there's a lot more that we're going to need to do.
Now, we know the community CPF funds are being used to buy up land around sensitive low-lying water areas and marshland so that we have a kind of buffer with sea level rise. How do you see kind of the funds available to be working on some of the more challenging issues around sea level rise and climate change?
Yeah, we amended the program about 10 years ago. We passed a piece of legislation in Albany to make it clear to the five towns that you can use this money to acquire land to deal with issues related to climate change and in particular sea level rise. So what I think that means in the future in places like the town of East Hampton, particularly with the discussions around Montauk, where they're talking about the need perhaps to retreat from the ocean and move back and be strategic about where development goes, that there'll be a need to acquire that property and, very expensive properties on the ocean. So the Community Preservation Fund clearly will be able to be used for that purpose. Now, I think that we'll need more than just those resources. I think, a strategic retreat related to climate change is going to require not just local resources, but also state and federal resources. But having state funding through something like the Community Preservation Fund to deal with retreat from sea level rise, I think, helps to attract state and federal dollars.
So let's move on to transportation. There have been some pretty exciting developments happening out here in the East End. LIRR has promised a new expanded service years ago, but it looks like this is now happening. Talk about the commuter rail transportation options that are opening up now.
Well, the East End of Long Island has been a desert when it comes to public transportation. The bus service for years was very spotty and inconsistent, and people couldn't really rely on public transportation. Now, if you wanted to go from the East End to the city, you could get on the Long Island Railroad, or you could get on the Hampton Jitney, or one of those lines. But if you wanted to get from East Hampton to Hampton Bays or from West Hampton to East Hampton, it was impossible to do. And, what we've seen happen is traffic has gotten worse and worse. We need to get people out of their cars. I think it's not just for the convenience of the commuters, but the reliance on the automobile also has environmental impacts. It also has economic impacts. So we really needed a public transportation option. The South Fork, because of our geography, there's one road in, basically, and one road out. So what we can do as far as additional improvements to the roadways was very limited. So working with the Long Island Railroad, and this is something that local governments here had been pursuing for literally 20 years, but about 2 years ago, the Long Island Railroad said, yes, we will provide you with additional trains for the commuters, the so-called trade parade, the people that live further to the west and, come on County Road 39 to get to their jobs on the South Fork and then going back the other way in the afternoon. So, these are two trains in the morning that will run between Spionk and Montauk. One will, arrive in the East Hampton area early, around 7 o'clock. The second one will be around 9 o'clock. And then in the afternoon, there'll be two trains back westbound to get people back, from their jobs and get them back, back to their homes. The trains were just one part of this. Obviously, we needed the trains to move people east and west. But you need the last mile. And once you're at the train station, because of the way that development has evolved here, we don't really have rail-based development. A lot of the train stations are not close to employment centers or downtowns. One of the things that we had to do, and I was able to get done in the legislature, was to provide funding to provide last-mile transportation, which will be bus shuttles from the train stations to downtowns, selected employment hubs, so that, the way this will work, if you live in Hampton Bays or in Brookhaven and you work on the East End, say you work in the East Hampton School District, you'll be able to pick up a train in Spionk, take the train to the East Hampton train station, and there'll be a bus waiting for you that will, shuttle, make the loop around, and you'll be able to get to your job And, you know, the cost will be, you know, for the train and the bus, it'll be one stop, one fare, $4.25 each way. So a round trip each day, about $8.50. And that will get people out of their cars, you know, less of a carbon footprint, fewer automobiles. So I think it's a major step in the right direction. You know, we were talking about, you know, utilizing the CPF to deal with climate change. So does this rail service, because finally we're getting people into public transportation and out of their automobiles and having less of an impact. So the service begins on March 4th. Every weekday, people will be able to take the train. And, you know, we've gotten a tremendous initial response. Now, we realize, I think it takes a while to build up ridership, and we're going to have to be patient with it. But I think, you know, judging by the amount of interest and the phone calls and the contacts we're making, I'm looking forward to it. I think, and if we have success with this, the Long Island Railroad has promised us that they'll make, you know, some modifications to the track system, create some sidings, so that instead of just having one train every 2 hours, maybe we can have more frequent trains every half hour. So that may be 4 or 5 years away, but you got to take one step at a time. And we think this is a major step for the East End, and hopefully will change the commuter habits of people that are here on the South Fork.
Well, that sounds terrific. Now, this is just going to the weekdays. If they envision possible expansion to more trains down the line, will they also expand to the weekend so we can relieve some of at least the summer traffic?
Yeah, I think that there's that possibility. Again, you know, we'll need some additional infrastructure improvements, and you know, you don't quite have the same level of traffic on the roads, at least in the morning and the afternoon. It's kind of all day long, but in the summertime especially. But, you know, we've focused the attention on this service really on commuters, that people that are trying to get to their jobs. But having a train, even in the summertime, even if it's not on Saturday and Sunday, but that goes back and forth. What I haven't mentioned is that, you know, when you put all of this together into the schedule, you've got trains going back and forth really most of the day now with this service. So, you know, it is an opportunity for people that are tourists, if, you know, if they're staying in Southampton and they want to go to Montauk, where they'll be able to get on the train. And of course, the town of East Hampton, at least during the summertime, runs a shuttle bus service in Montauk. So, yeah, I mean, the focus is on commuters, but ultimately, I think that those that are tourists here that want to go from one hamlet to the other, that it's going to provide an opportunity for them too.
If you've just joined Sustainable East End, we're talking with Assemblyman Fred Thiel about sustainability initiatives in legislation and that have already been passed to improve our environment here at home. How much is this going to cost local taxpayers, the expansion?
Of transport, it's really not going to cost them anything except for, you know, they pay state taxes too, but the Long Island Railroad is running the trains out of their existing budget, and God knows we pay enough to the MTA that we deserve to get our fair share of the service, and now it's finally coming. So no additional cost to taxpayers there. The bus shuttle system, while it'll be administered by Southampton Town and East Hampton Town, the cost is being paid for by a state grant, a $500,000 state grant. So there's no cost to the local town budget. You know, no increase in property taxes. Also helping to offset this is the fare. Now, I mentioned the fare will be $4.25 each way, $8.50 round trip. But out of that $4.25, $3.25 goes to the railroad for the train. That's for providing the train service. They get that revenue. But the towns will be getting a dollar for each rider. So a dollar out of that $4.25 will go back to the towns, and between the state grant and the revenue that they get from the bus service, you know, the towns will really be held harmless. There won't be any cost to the local taxpayer.
Will people be able to bring bicycles on the train? I know we can already bring them onto some of the buses, but what about the train?
The answer to that is yes. Bicycles, you know, it was an issue that we thought was really important on the South Fork. Again, as you want to have sustainable transportation, You know, many people do ride their bikes to work here, and sometimes you get there faster than if you're driving in a car. But you know, the Long Island Railroad permits bicycles. I think you have to get a permit from the Long Island Railroad to bring your bike on. But once you get your permit, you'll be able to use your bicycle as part of your commute. So if you want to take the train, but you don't want to take the bus, you can bring your bike.
Mm-hmm. Now, talking about bikes, what about the idea of bringing more rail trails here, more bike use? I understand there's going to be, or there are some plans to have a paved trail that can be used by people who are handicapped or walking. But what about rail trails?
Well, I think that, you know, is something that's near and dear to my heart. When I was a town supervisor here, I wanted to see a series of bike trails, bike paths that would have run from Southampton to East Hampton. And we even got a federal grant to be able to do it, but it just never got off the ground. There was opposition about where the route should be and all of that, and it kind of died on the vine. But I think, you know, that idea, I think, is being renewed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the governor had made a point about you know, trails from New York City to Albany. Well, Long Island needs to be part of that also. So there is a concerted effort being made to extend and provide that kind of trail on Long Island. It's in the early planning process, but I know, for example, not just the Long Island Railroad, you know, for use of the railroad right-of-ways, but also, you know, the LIPA power lines in some locations could also provide, you know, they have a right-of-way there. So that's a possibility. And of course, as we've mentioned before, we preserved a fair amount of open space that also might be able to provide some linkages there for bikes and recreation. So, you know, we're at the beginning stages of that, and you know, but as far as, you know, planning for that, but it is something that I think, number one, is good for transportation. It's a transportation option, obviously, also a recreational opportunity too, and it's long overdue here on, I think, and not just for the East End, but for all of Long Island.
You're listening to Sustainable East End. I'm Francesca Rhiannon. We're talking with Fred Thiel today. He represents New York's 1st Assembly District on Long Island's East End. We're talking about his work on behalf of environmental initiatives affecting our region. So now let's talk about wind. It's been a bit controversial, to say the least. Let's say the South Fork Wind Farm, there's been a lot of pushback on various things. Now, you were an early supporter of this. About a month ago, you put out a statement saying that you had some serious questions about recent developments. And then much more recently, it seems like there's been some mending of the fences. So
I think that's accurate. I, you know, and just to kind of start from the beginning, I mean, the plan for offshore wind, the governor's plan that NYSERDA is working on, is something I completely support. Obviously, we do have to look at each project and make sure that each project, you know, meets that vision and that we minimize, you know, some of the potential impacts, whether it be on the commercial fishing industry or community or in communities where the infrastructure on land has to be built. And, you know, certainly, there was a glitch with myself and Deepwater with the changing of the company and the changing of the project. Certainly my desire to see a little bit more transparency and a little bit more outreach from them. But they reached out to me, they apologized, and, you know, we're moving on. You know, not only with this particular project, but NYSERDA has an RFP, which the date for submissions was very recently for another 800 megawatts. And, you know, the good news is that there were four bidders. There is competition out there. So, you know, you've got at least four companies out there that want to provide wind power for New York State and particularly for Long Island. I find that to be encouraging. And I think, you know, we need to substitute wind power for fossil fuels. I think it needs to be part of our energy portfolio. We certainly need them to be transparent. And, you know, as we look at each of these projects, you know, we want to see, you know, what the impacts are going to be and try to minimize them. But, you know, I'm confident that when all is said and done with all of those companies that are interested and, you know, if we make the right decisions, that we can have a future here on Long Island where New York State is a leader with regard to wind power.
So what is the issue with transparency? What are your concerns about that? What are the things that, you know, taxpayers and residents, citizens should think about?
Well, I think the two things are cost and community impacts. Where are the substations going to go? Are the transmission lines, are they going to be buried? What are the impacts on land to the community? And obviously, as I mentioned, there's concerns for certainly for the commercial fishing industry, which is still important here on the East End. So, I'm mindful that we're dealing with corporations, and they are, in many cases, very large corporations whose first responsibility, first of all, is to their shareholders and to make a profit for their shareholders. So, my role is, that's their first responsibility. My first responsibility is to the people that live here. We've spent a lot of money, and we've talked about the resources that we've spent trying to protect community character. I want to make sure that is protected. So I just think, transparency, whether it's in government or it's in the corporate world, is a good thing. And I think the more that people know, the easier it is to build support and to break down some of the concerns that people have. So that, to me, is an important part. I think that, there needs to be a good corporate ethic. And again, we're not just talking about one company. I think when you have four companies and they have to compete with each other, that's an advantage for us to make sure that we get what we want. Because, it's not just one big monopoly out there where, it's their way or the highway. I mean, we've seen that, I think, sometimes with LIPA and PSE&G, where, they basically have a monopoly over the retail electric here. And, they haven't always been responsive to the local communities, the transmission lines in Eastport and East Hampton Village that maybe should have been buried that weren't. But they didn't, they didn't feel that they needed to respond to the community. So I think my job is to make sure that these companies do respond to the community.
Well, that is a great transition to a next question that I had, which was about LIPA and PSEG when we're talking about transparency. I mean, we pay the highest rates in the country. We're retiring the debt of, I believe, 100 cents on the dollar for, the Shoreham nuclear power plant, a deal that was made a very, very long time ago. Some people feel that we have a stranglehold, basically, on us here, and that it's difficult for communities to really take more ownership and power over how we do the grid and how we do transmission lines and how we supply power. Is there any possibility, any kind of idea of how we can begin to maybe wriggle free of some of these constraints?
Well, I think, first and foremost, I think with LIPA, the original intent for the Long Island Power Authority was an elected board of directors, not a group of directors that were appointed from Albany. Long Island doesn't have control over its energy future. So I would like to see the board of directors of LIPA elected, number one. I think that would go a long way. I would like to see additional oversight over rate applications. The Public Service Commission has no jurisdiction over LIPA. They basically set their own rates. So I'd like to see additional oversight. And then finally, something that East Hampton Town is looking at, Southampton Town is looking at, is community choice aggregation, being able to acquire your power from other sources and, create competition there. So, that is something that the towns are looking at that I support, that I think that, LIPA may own the transmission lines and the distribution system, but when it comes to the supply of power, let's give them some competition. And I think community choice aggregation CCA is one of the ways to do that.
Yes, and we did cover that, in fact, in last month's Sustainable East End. Now, my final question is for the future. There are a number of bills there's one bill, the Climate and Community Protection Act, the CCPA, And a companion bill that I believe is in the works, Climate and Community Investment Act. The first one has passed over and over in the Assembly and was bottled up in the Senate. And now there's some possibilities, perhaps, of getting it passed. Could you talk about the CCPA and its prospects?
Certainly. And elections have consequences. And in the case of Albany, this election, when it comes to climate change, has very positive consequences because, as you stated, that legislation passed in the assembly overwhelmingly several times, only to be never even come up for a vote in the Senate. But now we have a change in the Senate, a new Democratic majority, a new chairman of the Senate Environmental Conservation Committee. And, you know, we have the Assembly Environmental Conservation Committee, Steve Englebright's the chair, the Senate Environmental Conservation Committee, a Long Island senator, Todd Kaminsky, is the chair. I also serve on the Assembly Conservation Environmental Conservation Committee. So I think the outlook for this legislation is bright for enactment in 2019. I know that the Senate, because they are the brand new majority, they're going to be holding some public hearings first. And hopefully that will mean that maybe we can even make this better legislation after we have a public hearing process. But I'm confident that before the final gavel sounds in June for the 2019 legislative session, that we will have a comprehensive bill that we will enact on climate change in New York State.
And then we hope the governor will sign it.
We do hope the governor will sign it. I think I'm optimistic about that. I never prejudge what the governor might do. But I think there's overwhelming support for the legislation. The governor has proven to be a leader. When the president of the United States took us out of the Paris Climate Accords, the governor was one of the leaders with the governor of California about putting together a coalition of states to still comply with the Paris Accords. So I think this, again, is something that is consistent with his philosophy and with his views on climate change.
Well, on that optimistic note, I want to thank you again so much, Assemblyman Fred Thiel, for talking with us here on Sustainable East End.
Thank you. Looked forward to it. It was great.
This is Sustainable East End. We heard New York Assemblyman Fred Thiel. He represents the East End in Albany. Listen to Sustainable East End on the third Wednesday of each month on WPKN or online at sustainableeastend.blogspot.com. Sustainable East End is produced by Tony Ernst and me, Francesca Rhiannon.